Hello, everybody. Welcome and thank you for coming. My name is Reem Ramawi, and I'm the president of Students for Justice in Palestine here at UNO. I would like to introduce David Sheen, a Canadian-Israeli independent journalist and filmmaker. Sheen began blogging when he first moved to Israel in 1999 and has written for many publications, including Al Jazeera, Huffington Post, and The Daily Beast. He has spoken throughout the U.S., Canada, and Europe, and is currently writing a book about African immigrants to Israel and the struggles that they face. Welcome to David Sheen.
Thank you so much for coming. People who weren't able to come out tonight will be able to see this material. And of course, I'm also going to be adding URLs so that when you see some of this stuff, you may find it hard to believe. You'll be able to go onto the internet afterwards and look this stuff up and verify. With the title that I've chosen, The Bullet, The Ballot, and The Boycott, people generally assume that I'm going to be speaking about boycotting Israel. But in fact, I'm not going to be speaking about boycotting Israel. I'm going to be speaking about Israel boycotting. Because I contend that Israel actually boycotts its own non-Jewish citizens in many facets of life. I've only been talking about what's happening inside pre-1967 Israel. Because there's this discourse of liberal Zionists, and when the idea of boycotting Israel comes up, you know, then they're quick to jump in and say, wait a minute, that's not fair. It's not fair to boycott Israel, because if you're opposed to what Israel's doing in the territories, then you should boycott the territories. You should boycott the settlements. You should boycott goods and services that come out of the settlements. But don't boycott Israel. That's a separate entity altogether. Fine. In the West Bank, that's non-democratic Israel. But in the rest of the country, that's democratic Israel. Those are two separate entities. Now, of course, it's completely ridiculous. This is an artificial separation that has no basis in reality, right? That's so-called democratic Israel, where Palestinian people are boycotted. This is what I'm trying to explain to you, that Israel isn't a democracy, that in my mind it's an ethnocracy, and that the rights and privileges are not accorded to people on the basis of citizenship, but on the basis of their ethnicity. So since we talked about how can Israel be racist if there are black Jews, let's have a couple words about the other thing we often hear. And especially in recent years, how can Israel be racist if there are queer Jews? You may have heard this on campus as well. People are putting their eyes down like they're embarrassed about it. Let's talk about that for a moment. Yes, Tel Aviv is a place where at least some neighborhoods, not all, but at least in some neighborhoods, and certainly not in the rest of the country, but in some neighborhoods of Tel Aviv, you can walk hand in hand with a member of the same sex. But Tel Aviv is also a place where when you live with your partner of the same sex, people can come up to your home and graffiti it, fuck gays, kill gays and Arabs, in an attempt to drive you out of the neighborhood. Tel Aviv is also the place where at a gay community center, people will drive up and spray the place with bullets and kill two young queer Israeli youth. Till this day, the government has not produced any indictments in this case. No one has been brought to justice for these murders. And if you can imagine this, even the people that were injured, because there were several other youth that were injured at the scene, till this day, Israel doesn't even provide them for their medical needs. Two of them are still in wheelchairs. Again, too bad about the file, but it's just a quote from one of those survivors explaining that Israel doesn't even pay for their, you know, for the convalescence, for the wheelchairs that they're going to require for the rest of their lives. So, because they're victims of terror, but they're queer victims of terror, and queer lives only matter to the government if they can be used for Hasbara propaganda purposes. This is the perfect photo, really, that epitomizes this. So, this is at this year's Gay Pride Parade in Tel Aviv, and you have, I mean, there's people in white t-shirts, the people in blue are both Israeli ministers in the government, Ofir Akunis and Miri Regev. So here you have them coming out to the Gay Pride Parade because, as we know, gay people vote and gay people spend money. And so there's, you know, it's political opportunism to come out and try to, you know, get the queer vote. So this is why they come out to the Gay Pride Parade and to try to win these ballots. But it's all for show. There's no real solidarity there. It's a sick joke. It's just exploitative. So this is Friday, Gay Pride Parade. Saturday, Sabbath, a day of rest. Sunday, back to work. Okay, so 2 days after the Gay Pride Parade, those same ministers, okay, are in the government, and there's a vote on whether to extend non-discrimination laws to queer people as well, to extend it from the prohibition against discrimination to gender preference and identity. And those same ministers that went to the Gay Pride Parade saying, you know, proclaiming that they're allies of the queer community, they both voted against this vote to protect queer people from discrimination, okay? So it's a joke, okay? There's no real solidarity there. It seems that Netanyahu consistently appoints people to power that are the most homophobic that he can find. So the deputy speaker of the Knesset in the previous incarnation of the Knesset was that same Moshe Feiglin, who writes an op-ed in Jerusalem Post, "I am a proud homophobe." No need to read between the lines there. In the new government, the new deputy speaker of the Knesset is this man, Bezalel Smotrich. He just today hosted Lehava. But anyways, first, he's basically Israel's version of Rick Santorum, with everything that implies, just to give you a sense of what we're talking about. But just as in the Jewish Home Party, they bring terrorists, known terrorists, into the Knesset, in Smotrich's cases, he doesn't need to bring anyone else. He just comes in himself, because a couple years ago, he was actually brought into the police station, as you see here from this mugshot on the right, because he was found when they were evacuating some far settlement. He was found with like massive amounts of fertilizer. So we don't know exactly what he was going to do, but let's just say it wasn't kosher. So he was a suspected terrorist himself. And then now that there are queer pride parades in Israel, what he does is he organizes anti-pride protests. And so as, you know, young queer people in Israel finally find the courage to come out of the closet and stand up for themselves and, you know, demand equality in society, so he gets together donkeys and other animals, and then he and his friends lead them in front of the pride parade to say, "You are beasts. You are animals, you are abominations," with everything that implies what the Bible says should happen to queer people. This is one of these beast abomination parades that he organizes. And this year, we have at the Jerusalem Pride Parade, you actually have this year at the Jerusalem Pride Parade, a man stabbing, coming out and stabbing several people, including this young girl who he murdered, this 16-year-old Israeli woman. What's even more disgusting is that, yes, he was captured at the scene for stabbing her. He did the exact same thing 10 years ago. The same individual came out to the Gay Pride Parade in Jerusalem and also stabbed people. Why wasn't he stopped? He had only just been released from jail. He actually wrote a letter explaining that he intended to do something similar this time around. He wrote a letter and uploaded it. "It is imperative for every Jew to give up their life to cancel this great desecration of God." Why didn't the police even put one person on him? If they had put even one police officer on him, this whole tragedy could have been prevented. But they don't care about our queer lives. Instead, on that day, they sent all these officers to go to the wedding of two of the richest people in the country, the son and daughter of the owner of half of Israel's gas fields and the owner of Israel's biggest bank. So they decided to marry off their progeny to ensure that their riches remained in the, you know, all in the family. And so they knew, you know, the police know, I guess, stay close to the money plate, and so stay close to the purse strings. And so that's what the police did on that day. They sent, you know, huge forces to this wedding, but they didn't bother to send a single officer to watch this psychotic lunatic who had already stabbed people at the Pride Parade and was now released. And so this is, in the wake of this stabbing, we see that nothing changes. We see that the reaction of the, you know, the Jewish Dominionists isn't recalcitrant. We see the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, Shlomo Amar, saying about queerness, "This phenomenon will wane and disappear because most of the public is disgusted by it and detests it." And in the largest circulation newspaper for religious youth in Israel, they write, "We need to fight back and stop giving in to LGBT terror, or humanity will send itself back to the dark ages." And then if you walk down the streets of Jerusalem, you see posters like this, writing, bless you, Rabbi Yishai, that's the name of the stabber. You have done an act of Phinehas. And he took a pike and killed the whores. What is this reference to Phinehas? I need to go to the Bible to explain this to people who don't necessarily have that background. This mention of Phinehas, it's a character in the Old Testament. You can open up the book of Numbers and see for yourself, chapter 25. So according to the story, at that time, there was a Jewish priest, an Israelite priest, the name of Phinehas. And he learned that just as now, then too, there were Israelites and non-Israelites who fell in love and made love and, you know, lived lives of love and decided to spend their lives together. And he was so incensed at this race mixing, at this miscegenation, he was so enraged by it that he actually took a spear and he came upon a couple, and in the middle of the act of lovemaking, he ran his spear through both their bodies, murdering the two lovers, this Israelite man and this Midianite woman. This is, you know, some famous artistic representations of that episode. That's what the Torah says about this story of Phinehas. In the Talmud, it gets even worse, okay? So the Talmud, describing that same incident of Phinehas, it says, miracles were done for Phinehas. So Phinehas is the hero of the story, and Yahweh made miracles for him. His aim was through the penis of the man and the vagina of the woman. So the Talmud is saying that Yahweh, God, made a miracle so that he, this sick individual Phinehas, would pierce the intertwined genitals of this interracial couple while they were making love. This is how sick it gets. This is, I mean, what do you even say to this? This is some human centipede stuff here, you know? And this is how they frame us. This is how they call, you know, the next day or the next week after these acts, because the burning of the Dawabsha family and the murder of Shira Banki at the Pride Parade happened within just a few hours of each other. After these sick murders occurred, you know, liberal legislators said, we need to have a conversation, a national conversation about this incitement to racist and homophobic violence. But it called for a session of the Knesset, and none of the government showed up. None of the right-wing legislators showed up. They didn't feel it was interesting or important enough. And this is what we have, the situation. We have these racist, homophobic murderers, but it's not just that they're carrying out these sick acts. It's that Netanyahu and his government are, you know, creating the necessary conditions for them to do so. But then the question we have to ask is, who is enabling Netanyahu, right? So we see that the top funders of Netanyahu are both American, okay? The number one funder of Netanyahu is this woman, Miriam Falik, an American citizen. And as well as being Netanyahu's top funder, she's also Lehava's top funder, that same group of anti-miscegenation terrorists, okay? She's also the top funder of the group that funds them. And of course, Netanyahu's second top funder is Sheldon Adelson. You may be more familiar with him. He's also the top funder of the Republican Party. And among other things he said, I don't think the Bible says anything about democracy. If Israel isn't going to be democratic, so what? This is his vision for the country, and this is what he's paying to put into practice.